Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, November 20th, 2016, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in America. I'm Grantham Taylor Hughes for my show, The Grantham Taylor Hughes Show. My guest host this week, each week, is Gabrielle Foster, but I can't get her on because of technical difficulties. So, yes, I can't hear you. Can you hear me? I can't hear you, but I can hear you from the other part of the studio, so we can do it that way. All right, so, but I don't know if you're being recorded. I don't know what's going on right now. So if there's any difficulties, I do apologize to the people listening in this week. So we'll try to sort out the issues. All right, each week we try to cover the planks of my political platform, which is the international bankruptcy of the Geneva Convention of 1930. And the reason for that is it's a good starting point for political philosophy, because especially in the issues of in the West now with the recent election and all the controversy with that, it's good to get a balance and an approach to the political tenor or a viewpoint, I'll say, that people need to have. Because, having said that, since we've been in a bankruptcy since 1930, then we can understand that really the leaderships in the countries around the world is sort of puppetry, because we have the United Nations is really the only government. The rest of it is under the United Nations, and then they wield that from what is known as the New World Order. Now, a lot of people think that's sinister and negative, but in reality, it just needs to be polished or fixed up. That's why I bring in the four planks that I have. And people say, what does house have to do with politics? And then I kiddingly say that without your health, what's the point of the politics? So we have the other three planks are sovereignty, solvency, and a fianchetto. And if we look at the solvency issue in terms of when we talk about the bankruptcy, then that becomes an issue of how do we get from the bankruptcy into a balanced banking equilibrium, they call it, in banking, where you have a balancing of accounts. Are you there, Gabrielle? Can you hear me? Okay, and see, I can't hear you in the studio, but I can hear you in the other room, so we're in. But I can't hear you not unless maybe my headphones aren't in. I hope that, so if you can hear me, we're probably being recorded. I just don't know for sure. I'll have to check afterward. All right, so we're talking about the bankruptcy issue, and the proof of that is, because I use best evidence and documentation, I just don't blather on about things, and the proof of it is if everyone will pull out a dollar bill out of their purse or pocket, then we can see that, and I've done this exercise many times in the past. We've had hundreds of shows, and excuse me, I should drink a little water, but maybe, Gabriella, maybe you can talk for a minute or two. Go ahead, fill in the space if you can, or sing a song or something. Oh, okay. We don't know if you can be heard okay. But you can hear me. But you can hear me on the phone, or can you hear me? Oh, you can hear me on the phone? All right. So, well, I may not be being recorded either. I can't tell that. So, again, we apologize to the listening audience for our foibles over here. All right. So, we'll just continue on. The idea of it's very important that the dollar bill, because I show this to people on a constant basis. I bring out the dollar bill to try to explain that particular contract. And it is a contract because it's signed by two people at the bottom, albeit they're not original signatures or copies of the Treasurer of the United States and the United States the Treasurer and the U.S. Secretary of Treasury. All right, so we have two signatures at the bottom of the dollar bill that makes the contract. When you sign a document with two signatures, it makes it a contract. And if you're a contract is when there is money involved with it. That means there's consideration. If you're dealing with a document with no consideration that's being signed, that's just an agreement. All right, so that would be classical contracts law when there's money involved with it. So obviously, and the irony is that the dollar bill is money of itself, the contract and the paper. People would argue the point that it's not really money, it's just representation of specie. But that's the big discussion about specie currency being a problem in terms of having it backed by something. So that gets into the whole point of crossing over into spiritual things and with the idea that where does the origin of the specie come from? In other words, what is value? So I would ask you that, Gabriella, what is value? Yeah, I hope you're being recorded. Maybe I shouldn't ask you anything this week because you might not be being recorded, and I do apologize. It's pretty silly this week. And we weren't on last week because we were having technical difficulties to try and sort out the studio problems. Anyway, and I don't think you're being recorded. I'm not sure. What's that? Yeah, I don't think you're being heard, but you can hear me. See, so we'll just leave it at that. And I apologize, everybody. We'll try to sort out the technical difficulties this week and get to make this work. And so I do apologize for that. All right. So having said that, so we'll go back to the contract of the money issue. Even though I've gone over this in the past, and I apologize for the people to be bored with that whole thing, but it's an important issue with reference to we're spending this money each day with purchasing power, and we're using it to buy things on a constant basis, all right? But at the same time, we really don't know what we're using. We're not really paying attention. It's like people drive cars, but they don't really know how they work sometimes. Some people don't know how they work. You know, it's sort of the utilization of something without really knowing how it was created or functions. In other words, you don't have to be a weaver to wear a coat. Anyway, so Gabriella can't respond, so I truly apologize. But she is listening, so that helps the audience factor. In other words, I'm not necessarily talking to the wall, you know, but I probably do sometimes. Anyway. So I'm still telling my jokes, which is pretty good. Anyway, okay. All right, we're moving right along to see how much time can I waste here. So if we look at the dollar bill, we have a dead president in the middle, which is Washington. And I apologize that he's dead, but that's the nature of mortality. Boy, this is still pretty good in terms of silliness. But anyway, we have a contract. It's signed by two people. We have a citation of law, which is this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. That's 11 words from the 1792 Coinage Act. I'm not reading this, too, by the way, but it sounds like I am reading it. Oh, the jokes still come out, don't they? Anyway, so the irony of the 1792 Coinage Act is that it's suspended law. Under the Uniform Commercial Code, then they say, well, how can it be legalized paper if it's suspended? Well, the remedy is in UCC 1-308 because it's a compelled benefit. So we compelled to use that money under the remedy of UCC 1-308. So that's what backs it by law is the Uniform Commercial Code, not the Coinage Act that's printed on the paper. It's that's relatively new information this week, a little more in detail. In terms of really, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private, is really not what backs it, albeit it's written on the paper. What backs it is a party with explicit reservation privileges demands the 1-308 is what backs it. Party with explicit reservation privileges performs promises and or sense under performance demand or offered by the other party does not prejudice the privileges reserved. okay? That's word for word 1-308 with the upgrading in terms of some of the coding, because they say they use rights instead of privileges, and rights is not correct. All right, so that is word for word 1-308 that actually backs the money. See, that's the Uniform Commercial Code under Bankruptcy Articles of Section 1. All right, so that's what backs the money in terms of the law, the legal parts of it. All right, and having said that, that means that what's printed on there is, again, suspended law, but the suspended law is backed by the UCC. And that's not very well known, because most people think that UCC is Admiralty Maritime Equity Law, and I'm saying, no, that's the law of the sea and the template for the Uniform Commercial Code, but we're not really using Admiralty law in the courtrooms, albeit a lot of people think that, but we're not really using it. I mean, we don't really use it, but they think that sometimes in terms of advocates that believe or the people, the street knowledge claiming that they're admiralties in the courtroom, but it really isn't. And then because that's really laughed off in the courtroom, even, excuse me, I have to, and sometimes I have to eat, so I eat before the shows on Sunday nights, and I apologize for that because I get congested sometimes, so I do apologize for that. All right, and that means that not my eating has no meaning to the whole thing, but in reference to the legal or the lawful issue about money is that backed by the Uniform Commercial Code, but we're under Section 1, so we're not really in a general lawful common law presence. We're in a bankruptcy situation. We'll probably be there for a long time. So people don't really understand that. People always want to go back to the common law and standard of law, but we can't get back there because we have a mathematics problem in terms of the monetary bankruptcy. It can sound fairly complex, and it probably really is ultimately. I mean, it's simple to me, but it's complex to others, especially when you hear it for the first time. So that's why it's good to repeat these shows. I hope you can repeat this one, because I don't know if it's even being recorded, ironically. I think it might be, but let's put it that way. I'll find out later in the archive to see if it was recorded. So you can't really communicate with the Blog Talk directly. I think it's too difficult to do that, so it's pretty much machinery-type thing, so that's the nature of that. Anyway, moving right along, as I said, the dollar bill being the best evidence for the bankruptcy shows the banner at the top, which I often point out to people, but it used to say silver certificate, but now it says Federal Reserve note, which is a big controversy and arguments, and there's tons of information on the internet about it, and people get all up in arms over all of that, and I try to put a proper perspective on it each week by saying it's necessary because we need to utilize it, so it's called compelled benefit. Compelled benefit is what the money, the Federal Reserve note, although it's a debt instrument, it still is necessary for utilization in our system. We use it each day to get our needs, our food, shelter, and clothing. We need to use that in terms of the monetary system. All right, so that would be known as a compelled benefit. Just like everything around us is pretty much a compelled benefit, because we need to utilize what's in forms and manifestations around us. All right. So that means that because the remedy at law will allow for compelled benefit, and that will go back to the old 1-207 Uniform Commercial Code that was amended in 2004 to 1-308. But old 1-207, I like the wording better, but 308 in principle covers it, Because really what it means, we're aware of the law, we're aware of the law, and we're aware of the law, and therefore we have remedy in terms of being protected by the law. So 207 says that we're not liable for the limited liability of a compelled benefit. So that means everything around us has limited liability of a compelled benefit, like the court systems and anything is upright and it has capacity that we need to utilize, we're not really liable for it, okay, especially in terms of the money. So that means we're aware of the fact that money is a compelled benefit. So when we're aware of 1-208 and we cite 1-208, then it has to be it is respected by the courts, because we're fortunate enough that the court system, by contract, will deal with the documentation. That's why when you're dealing with paper, and if you send paper, then they have to address paper. You see what I mean? So that's part of the irony of contracts law, because now they have to field the documentation, read the documentation. Having said that, sometimes when I've done suits in the past where they don't read it, I had to go to judicial review in order to have things read, because there's a placation issue too in reference to documentation sometimes. But by sending it in, they at least have to put it on file. See, I mean, sometimes the courts won't read things, but they still have to file it. See, and if somebody does read it, then that's all the better. And it's because if they comprehend it, see, we got to issue a comprehension. People will deny that they believe that they can understand things, but they really don't, because of attention level limitations. People's attention is limited. They're focused on traditional information. So when you deviate things that are a little bit different in terms of orthodox ways and traditional ways of thought, or traditional ways of writing things, and it's not nomenclature. What I'm saying with that is a uniform commercial code is not, it's the law, but they can't really reveal it in the courtroom, because they're concerned about, still concerned about revolution, and they're concerned about the bankruptcy being a major focus. And we all know it exists because the proof's in our pocket, but they don't put it in the front page of the New York Times and things of that nature. And they don't really discuss it online as the vernacular of our lives. For instance, again, if people don't even realize what's in their pocket, most people think we're on a gold standard. If you ask people we're on a gold standard, 98% of the time they'll say yes. And so that's a real problem, because they're not aware of the fact that we haven't been on the gold standard since 1930. So that's a big issue, a huge issue. And that's why I try to do my little bit here on Sunday nights to try to explain to a handful of people that to keep that glue intact in reference to the truth of the matter. I always call myself the recommendibus, the last say in all this, because I'm very aware of it. At the same time, I'm not perceived as a threat, because I'm very sincere about giving out the information, because everybody's entitled to my opinion, right? That's a funny line. I don't know where that came from. Maybe Gandhi or something. Still telling jokes to himself this week. And so, because Gabriella, we can't hear her, I do apologize for that. I don't know what happened. We'll have to sort that next week. We still have about 12 minutes here, so I'll sing songs and do dances, because I have to be doing my soliloquy, you know. I'll read some Hamlet or something. But it's very important that we understand that the money is not backed by gold or silver, and it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that, because the issue is people are really wanting to go back to the gold standard. But I've said many, many times in this show that it caused the world wars of the 20th century. And they say, well, how did that happen? Think about it. If I had gold in a building, somebody wants to steal it from me. And if they did steal it from me, then they're controlling the currency and not myself. See, so that's the whole idea. If I'm backing paper with gold, the gold controls the receipts. All the paper are receipts, but we legalize the paper, you see, because of the unwieldiness of gold and silver. I mean, you can't carry big wheelbarrows full of gold into. I know they use that as pictures of when they're doing those hyperinflation thing, pictures of old times where they're wielding in big wheelbarrows full of gold coins to buy a loaf of bread, right? Well, that was a hyperinflation image that they have. Well, in one sense of the word, that's the truth, because you carry, it's just inconvenient. That's why paper money is very convenient, lightweight. You know, you can put many denominations on the numbers on it if necessary. But they, in America, they have a $100 bill. If you get $1,000 bills or $500, you have to pay interest on that. So you don't see that too often in the marketplace. In terms of the higher denominations, usually they're $100 bills, and people don't really carry that much money around with them, and that's part of the it keeps the economy at a sort of a low level to a certain degree. I'm not into the contrived issue. I don't target people, or my slogan is is to work with and not against, and you know, not working against, to work with and to educate. To get information to people so they'll have knowledge and gain some enlightenment with these things, because we need to work together. We need to work together because it's very important that we do that, because we're not sustaining a society if we're working against each other, and that just causes a lot of problems. So we have more problems than necessary because people aren't paying attention. See, and that's why I do this show each week, so I can get out some information so that people can avail themselves of it, because it's part and parcel of the truth in the matters of contracts law. We've been in contracts law since the 12th century. A lot of people don't realize it's really because of land titles. We demand and want our paper titles, but we won't give those up because it wouldn't be the matter of the American tribes, with reference to how they used to deal with their land, would be control. The word control and management is very important, because we need to realize that controlling the land without a contract means that our neighbor would have to agree that a parcel of land would be ours. See what I mean? Without having a paper title to it. People can't deal with that these days. They don't really understand how that would be. They would also not understand how you could have a system without a medium of exchange. We were talking with my UK group this morning about indirect trade. Indirect trade would be a no money, no medium of exchange, like the American tribes had in the back in the olden days, as they say. And before they were Western Europeanized with the medium of exchange, when they were using wampum and what have you, they would channel their talents, their food, shelter, and clothing, the farming, the weaving, and the building would be channeled into wigwam, and then people, wigwam, I think in Cherokee, one of the American tribe languages means outlet. Meaning you put everything into the outlet, and then you go and get what you need from that outlet freely. You don't pay for it. The whole payment idea was part of the birthright that I think I've defined, whereas no one else has really defined the birthright correctly. In other words, the birthright being your one's right to have their food, shelter, and clothing, not the privileges at that point. Privileges would be licenses issued by the government that are issued by the pure trust, exchange of grantor. And that would be government provisions now creating privileges of use. So after the one birthright we have by being born in this world, I call it the grand compromise of being born, and people are entitled to their food, shelter, and clothing, and they're entitled to that by bringing birth to the physical plane. And therefore, that's called birthright. I don't think anybody defines that like I do. I don't think they understand it. That's why I call myself a Bendivist, the last say, of the truth in these matters. And that's okay, you know. I'm not trying to declare myself as God or something of that nature. It's just a matter of explanation and rational explanation to be able to get clarity on these things. And that's what I try to do each week. And this week it's a little more difficult. I don't have any feedback from my guests, so I'm on a 30-minute just rambling, as they say in America, which really came out of the drug world, the ramble word, rambling, ramble on routine. But that's just, it's a rubbish phrase, really. I mean, people really need to communicate. They need to speak. We need to speak more to each other. We need to spend the time and become masters of time instead of slaves of time. And it doesn't really matter. It's not a matter of being topic-driven. It's a matter of being driven, basically. And the joke I make about I'll be topic-driven when you drive me to the topic. If I don't make it to the topic, too bad. Okay, I still have 5 minutes to kill here. Maybe I can sing a few songs. And then they'll say, don't lose your day job, right? Anyway, I think Gabriella really buggered out on the whole thing. I think she gave up on it, which is okay. But it's okay. I do apologize to the listening audience this week for the technical difficulties. Hopefully I can fix them for next week. And I think I sorted it out. It's one of these things that happens. All right, so I'm re-leaning for the last 4 minutes here. Maybe I can do a soft shoe and a tap dance with a straw hat and cane. Oh, you can't see me. I forgot. But I act light about the whole subject matter, but really it is a major joke in terms of the silly bankruptcy that we've been in for so long, because there's no really reason why we should. Now, I've mentioned in the past the book The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace Wattles, and you know I've talked about there's two things very important in reference to gaining great wealth. And one is you have to have a vision, and I highly recommend what they call the vision board. You create a board. In the past, I called them goal posters. I was taught that many years ago, probably 30 years ago, about goal posters, even longer than that, maybe 40 years ago. And they are, you put pictures up. You just go through magazines and put up things that you like, and you make a collage out of it. And you put it up on the wall, and you look at it all the time. I know most people think that's new agey or some kind of woo-woo stuff, but in my opinion, it really works, and people swear by it, and I do too. I think it's a really great thing. But that's only one aspect of a twin aspect that's very important. The other aspect is you have to have kind of a mantra to keep the attention upon the vision. A repetition, like in religion, they would call it like a prayer, like you're saying a prayer type. But in the aspects of visualization, then it would be just a repetition to keep your attention upon the vision. when we talk about there's a law called the perpetual law of increase. So we each one of us are creators. Like we said, that birthright. We're all creators, so we learn how to create through the idea of thinking of increase. You think of increase, you repeat it to yourself, but then there's a higher Sanskrit word, which I think is a derivation of language, in my opinion. It would be like speaking in tongues, the Pentecostal, which we would really appreciate that religious section. So the higher Sanskrit word for increase is Zika, Z-E-K-A, Z. Z-E-K-A, not the virus, Z-I-K-A, so don't let that scare you off and what have you. So repeating Zika and the vision will bring everything to one. So I really think that's important, and I want to thank everybody for being here on the show. I can't really see the clock in terms of where I'm getting down to the last few seconds of the show. But I know I'm down to the last minute or so. I do have a clock. I do have a second hand on my clock on my screen. And again, I want to thank everybody for being here. This is Grant Taylor Hughes for my show. See you next week, and we'll sort out technical details. Bye for now.